Good morning. My guest, you may remember, was back here in 2010 when we talked about her debut novel, which was Drop in the Habit. A former nun, she described life in the convent and her book became a bestseller. And 8 years later, she's back and she's here to talk about what's happened in the last 8 years and also her new book. So a very warm welcome to my guest this morning, former Limerick girl, always Limerick, I guess, girl, the local author, Marion Dante. Morning.
Good morning, Mandy.
Good morning. Yeah, it's lovely to have you here as well. Cast your mind back, if you will. Were you prepared for the success of the first book?
No, not at all. No, it was sort of therapeutic and I didn't, you know, it was the satisfaction of having written it, but no.
No, we had some problems with the sound there. You had no idea it was going to take off the way it did. No? Unbelievable. Is it easy to get a publisher when you have such a big story like that? I mean, did they snap your hand off for it?
No, not at all. It's so difficult. It really is. You write to so many people and they get rejects and you wonder. And then I think it becomes, when it's a topic of the time, they might take you up, but otherwise, you know, you constantly, people want to, editors and publishers want to be handed everything finished on a plate, so they have got very little work to do, and then they think you're going to be successful.
Right. Okay. So they don't want to do the whole editing side of things.
No.
Right. Did you find that? Let's just recap, because there are going to be people that don't know about this book. So you were in a convent for how many years? 33 years, from the age of?
14.
And did you know, I mean, towards the end, when you obviously got the feelings that you must leave,
yeah.
Did you know you were going to write a book about that?
No, not at all, no. I wrote the book because I needed to write. I needed to out myself, as they say nowadays.
Yeah.
And I kind of couldn't explain to everybody what was happening. And I felt that writing was going to give, it was kind of a therapy for me. And it was a way of sort of telling people, you know, where I'd been. Then people got curious. And I think it was the Daily Mail that sort of said they would print something. They wouldn't edit it. They would just print what you'd written. And there was a whole lot of mistakes. And and they spelt dropping wrong and everything. But then that sort of encouraged me to, you know, keep on, you know, keep going.
Did you have any sort of formal training in writing or anything?
Not really. I mean, I'm a teacher, so and a primary school teacher. And I had done some courses, but nothing, I think it was Bede Roberts. I went on a course to the Isle of Wight, holiday fellowship courses, and she said, you write conversationally, so it's very accessible. And I thought, oh, I've got a talent.
Excuse me. So when you were, I mean, you say you were a teacher, but you were in the convent for 33 years.
Yes.
Did you teach as a nun?
I taught here in Chertsey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes, I taught in Our Lady's First School here in Chertsey. And then as a nun, I belong to the Salesian Order. Salesians here in Chertsey and Farnborough. Wonderful order. I have absolutely nothing against them. They're a tremendous force for good. And the founder, St. John Bosco, is a very... I mean, if Theresa May had him in the cabinet, she'd be really pleased.
So you were you here for 33 years? Or was it a mix between Ireland and...
No, I was in England and Scotland. I was all over the place because the Salesians work for poor people. So it was children. I was up in Mithill in Glasgow, outside in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And I was in Bermondsey and Battersea, and then I was in Posh Henley. So we got moved around, you know, as the need was, you know, came in.
So did you start to write this book whilst you were still a nun?
No.
So you literally, you left the convent, and how long afterwards before you decided, I'm going to put this all on paper?
Well, I had breast cancer, which I thought, in a way, I began by thinking this was God's punishment for me leaving. You know, I felt so guilty and awful. And it was when I went to the Fountain Centre in the Royal Surrey Hospital, and I met a radiologist called Charlotte McDowell, who gave, you know, she sort of asked me questions. And then I met somebody called Gail, and it was all these questions. And I thought, I need to really sort this out. So I went to all kinds of therapeutic things, you know, and invest, you know, what you do when you get cancer, you're trying to find out what happened, why. And then it was the result of that. I thought, writing's my therapy. You know, I'll do that.
And so it really started off as some sort of a cathartic practice.
Yeah.
So you got the book together, and did you pitch it to publishers? Or
Lots. Mm-hmm. Lots.
Like J.K. Rowling, you got a few people saying them,
No. And then it went to Poolbeg in Dublin. And the lady there, Paula Campbell, was the in charge there. And it was a time when there was lots of curiosity about religious and what they did and why they left. And I was famous for one day. You know, I was on telly, I was on the radio, I was in the newspapers, but I was so scared. I'd never done anything like that before, you know, but it really helped a lot to give me a bit of confidence, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And the journey's been a big one since then, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And would you say that writing has become your life since leaving the convent?
Yes, it has, because it's a way of cutting yourself off and thinking and enjoying just the writing bit of it, you know. And I mean, I've had so much help. I mean, Barbara Large, down in Winchester University, and lots of people. My nephew, I mean, I'd never have got published these last two books. Novels. I don't know anything about. I mean, I can write on computers, but I don't know anything about publishing or anything like that. And he's. Yeah. I mean, Mark is. He's already a successful, author. So he's done Robot Overlords, and he's done a film, and he's done lots of things. So he's really handed me, you know, all the technical bits.
Wow, you come from a very talented family, by the sounds of it.
No, not really.
Okay, well, that's amazing. Right, so let's talk about what you've been doing apart from the writing since we saw each other back in, 8 years ago, as I say. You've done all sorts of amazingly enriching things, haven't you? Like you took the walk across...
Yes, Santiago Compostela, And I did climb Machu Picchu. But they were all because I'd been helped. Because I got such a lot of support from the Fountain Centre, I became a fundraiser. And I was there from when the Fountain Centre was set up in the Royal Surrey. And it's absolutely wonderful place for cancer patients. And I'm so grateful that I decided, Sharla said, you know, would you do Machu Picchu? And I thought, well, that's somewhere up north, you know.
So somewhere up north.
I haven't got a clue. And then I ended up training to do that. And then I climbed Machu Picchu. I mean, that's another story. I was supposed to on that trek because I got altitude sickness when I was there. And the rest were going to go ahead without me. And then this chap said, I can give you a massage. And I sort of didn't know really what was on. So I went into this sort of minibus thing. And then he said to me, you're pensionable age now. He said, could we get married? He just wanted my pension.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. He wanted the passport as well, probably. Oh, yeah. Funny. So that must be quite shocking for you, as you know, the last 8 years or so, you've sort of made a life for yourself outside the convent. Mm-hmm. How long since you left the convent, actually? It's a bit longer than that,
isn't it?
Well,
it's 1991 I left.
Right.
And then cancer was 1995, and then that's when I started writing from then. So it's quite a long time now.
Yeah.
So I have had to, you know, I mean, I joined the U3A. I joined everything that I could think of to help me, you know. I first of all got very depressed, you know, because you know what it's like when you get cancer.
Yeah, I do.
Very frightening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was hard. And then, but people were very understanding and curious.
Yeah.
Because they want this person. She doesn't have any children, you know, what's she doing? So that sort of started me off, you know, and then the fundraising's always been tremendously encouraging. And also you belong to another family, you know.
Exactly. You leave one family like the convent for another one as well.
Yeah.
Interesting that you say about the Fountain Centre. We don't have a lot to do with them here, but obviously I've heard of them, and there's lots of... they do lots of stuff for people there, therapeutic stuff, don't they? I did know that.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about your new books. But first of all, we're going to break for a little bit of music. So you chose, first up, the Everly Brothers, All I Do Is Dream. Why was that?
Well, because that's very often what I do is, you know, if I find things difficult, I dream of a better life, and I dream it helps me to sort of imagine sometimes that life could be much better, you know.
So is this daydreaming we're talking about here? You sort of like
well,
lock yourself
yeah,
up
so,
and,
yeah.
and just daydream. Okay, well, let's break for that, and we'll be back to talk about your new books. Everly Brothers there. If you just joined me, my guest this morning is Marion Dante. Am I saying that right, by the way? Is that how you say it?
I just say Dante.
Dante.
Yeah.
Dante. Okay, yeah. Dante is. So let's talk about the new novels, because yeah. two... simultaneously released. Why?
Well, I went to Barbara Large to do sort of, you know, I was kind of aware that I really wasn't a good writer, and I wanted to get myself, wanted to improve, and also I wanted to advice on, you know, what you do and everything. And we began, she, you know, writing, and of course it grew, because she would sort of say to you, oh, so you've got that character. Now, what's that to do with that? And why have you got this? And, you know, explain things. And so they grew, and they became much more conversational, and I hope improved. You know, my writing improved as well, because yeah. she's a tremendous help.
Yes.
And very, you know, she runs the Hampshire Writers and the Winchester Festival and all that, so... Yeah.
So there's a Winchester Festival of Literature, is
yes,
there?
Yes, yes, yeah. Really good, yeah.
It's amazing, actually, when you start looking around at how many... writing festivals and book fairs
yeah.
there are actually
yeah.
And we were just talking off air a bit earlier on about how if you are an aspiring new writer, things are pretty tough as well, not just to get published, but when you are published to actually make any money out of it, and the publishing houses
yes, yeah.
as well. Would you say it's the same sort of situation as meets like musicians these days, that
yeah.
they have to actually talk and go to festivals
yeah.
and have like engagements like that
yes,
to actually
yes.
make any money, any book signings and
yes,
things like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I go with WI a lot, and I go to, you know, any Probus groups or lots of, you know, lots of different groups to speak to as a speaker. And you have to do that in order to, you know, people are interested in my story, but they also they want to buy a book.
Yes.
And, you know, they that's one way of doing it. And then also with the Hampshire Writers, they have a competition every month. So, I mean, I was totally surprised last month. I won the competition, and that gives you, because there's really good people writing,
yeah.
so it gives you a boost. But
yeah.
that's the best way of doing it, I think, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Searching for Love and A Love as Strong. And let me just read this out to you. You know it because you've probably seen it. Convent life during the 1970s, as seen through the eyes of Frankie Danivet,
yeah.
an innocent young postulant, readers are offered glimpses of harsh practices contrasted with comic interludes. Is this a love story?
Yes.
Searching
yes.
for love?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's, and you know, you don't stop loving when you're in the convent, and especially when you're a teenager and you're told that you have to sublimate all the feelings, you know, that you, if you want to, you know, I first saw, when I was an aspirant, I saw somebody said to me, there's jasmine on the corner, and I thought it was jazz men.
Oh.
And I went running out, and of course it was that flower, you know, and I was still hankering after Elvis Presley, Tommy Steele, you know, and all those things. And you kind of, the hymns and the devotions sort of are the way of making it into kind of Jesus in heaven and that. And it's quite hard. So you still have all the urges and feelings that you always had.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the difficult part.
It must be very difficult for a young girl who's, you know, coming to terms with being a woman. And you were in the convent from 14, weren't
yes,
you?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Hard to handle, really.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And so this is really, when you say searching for love, so it talks about love that's not... gained, then, is that what
yeah,
it is?
It's not accessible,
right?
So you can, I mean, I'd fall in love with one of the nuns,
yeah,
and then wonder why that was happening because I was the woman, and then realizing why the nuns made, you know, were forever telling you shouldn't have particular friendship, you must mix with everybody,
yeah.
And you thought, oh, well, you know, I like that one better than that one.
Yeah.
And but they were safeguarding you from what we would call now lesbianism. But if you had, you know, they were worried about all those sort of things.
Yeah.
We didn't see it like that. And then, of course, if a priest came to say mass and he was really nice,
yeah,
you'd fall in love with him, you know, and then you'd want to go to confession to him. You'd want to go to the folk group that he was guiding. And you didn't know what it was happening to you, you know. So
wow,
it was
hard.
Really
hard.
Yeah.
So you at the same time, you wrote another book called A Love as Strong.
Yes.
And this is a tender sequel to Searching for Love. And both of them have come out together. Why was that?
Well, they were really, I mean, I started writing and it grew. But one's definitely separate from the other, but they do lead on to each other. And the second one is really where I try to find out what you do when you fall in love. What do people mean, you know, when they wink at you? Do they mean that they really like you? Do they want you? And then what happens after that? You know, what are the intricacies that goes on? So I make lots of mistakes and lots of finding out and fall in love with a priest, fall in love with a man that's married and all these sort of things, but not really knowing what I'm about. So I had to keep learning all the way along. And then I finally... you know, I won't tell you the end of the book, but I do, you know, it is a journey, and it's a funny one as well. There's amusing bits in it.
So you don't mind sort of like being quite, you know, having quite a lot of humility. You don't mind sort of sending yourself up a little bit by describing those awkward moments. And so it's not really, neither of them seem to be love stories in the true sense of the word. We're not talking 50 Shades of Grey or something like that.
No.
We're talking about something far deeper and stronger and more organic. So are these, I mean, because the first novel was an autobiographical.
Yes, it was autobiographical,
These, are they more using your imagination or is it also very autobiographical in content?
Well, it's all what I write is always based on what I know, my life, the life I know. But I've allowed myself to imagine what it would be like, you know, to have met somebody, which I haven't met. You know, I haven't met anybody. But I suppose I had a setback because when I got cancer, I went to Sicily, and a priest took advantage of me, so it sort of set me back a bit.
Oh wow!
And so I've kind of very curious, but not confident enough to make a commitment in a way, you know. So I suppose that's really what.
So some of it is imagination, but you know, it's tough, isn't it? It's tough because you haven't had that journey that most of us have because of you going into the convent so early. You know, I who knows, we're all still here, so there's still time for that. But do you find, moving on to something different now, do you find that you ever experience writer's block?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are days when you sort of think, you know, and you also criticise what you've written. You sort of look at what you've written and say, this is rubbish, you know, but that better go. Or you give it to somebody else to read and they don't see it at all because... You know, we were talking earlier about people judging your work as being very subjective. You know, people sort of assess you. And I remember going to one writing group and the lady said to me, you haven't got any adjectives in it. And I thought, well, I write a conversational style and, you know, I don't want to be complicated or, you know, just going for to be sort of somebody that shows off or anything. It's just, it helps me. And if it helps somebody else, then that's fine. You
that's
know?
What it's
yeah,
there for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do we think that this Frankie Danivet is the protagonist in both books? Is she going to be a regular feature in Marion's world?
Yeah.
Is there another one on the way?
I'd love to. I mean, the thing that I'm sort of thinking about now is because I did three treks to Santiago Compostela. Not, I didn't do the full treks. I did the last 100K of three times, and that's been really worthwhile. And then Machu Picchu. So I thought I'd do a journey. You know, I haven't done anything yet, but that's my kind of thing I'm thinking of as well. You know.
And let's just for a moment tell us about what that gave you, that trip.
Oh, the trek is really good because you walk with people you don't know. You meet people on the way and, you know, that you share stories. You know, it's like, a bit like the Canterbury Tales, but not quite. And, you know, it's like a kind of thing about, it's like a life journey. It's a journey. We all have a journey through life. And this is a physical journey, you know, and it's hard. Yeah. The weather, just like in life, you don't know what's going to happen. And you don't know if you can do it or not, you know. I mean, that the way, you know, the Martin Sheen and James Nesbitt story, the way that DVD, that gives you some idea of kind of what happens. But yeah. Things happen on the way. You know, you get to know people, you get to know yourself.
Yes, you that's know, what better. I've heard.
Yeah, so it's a good journey.
So the next book might include a little bit of that somewhere in it.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So the last 8 years been an interesting time for you by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
And plenty of new experiences to be had. Yeah. You're still heavily involved with the Fountain Centre, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah,
raising money for them.
Yeah.
If somebody's listening in that is, first of all, that has suffered from cancer and does need a little bit of help. It's based in Guildford, I hear.
Yeah.
And it certainly helped you, didn't it?
Yeah, it's the Royal Surrey Hospital. But I think we're associated, Chertsey is associated with there as well. And every hospital, we hope, would have this oasis, you know, within it. And there are lots of places like that, even if you're not, you know, you're not tied to the Royal Surrey. There are lots of places in hospital which are really good. I mean, I belong to a choir too for kindred spirits because singing helps as well.
And singing helps to, you know, make you feel better and give you some
kindred
help.
Kindred spirits is very good. So it's our choir, you know. So it's
definitely worth looking into. And for those aspiring writers out there that would like to, you know, sort of make a go of it, what would be your advice?
I just keep, you know, I think entering little competitions is good. But I think always you know what you want to express. And, you know, going to groups and listening to people is great because then you get some idea of, you know, what's accessible. And reading, you have to do a lot of reading other people's productions as well. So, yeah, I keep trying, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to the next one. But before that, I have to mention these two books now. They're available on Amazon. And are they available in the bookshops yet?
No, they won't be in the bookshop because that's another process I haven't gone through.
Right.
But they're online in Amazon and they're in Kindle.
They're in Kindle. Yeah. Right. So we've got Searching for Love and A Love As Strong. And the first one to read is The Searching for Love. That's the first one out, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, as you say, the second one evolved out of the first one.
Yeah.
So I know they've only just come out. It's March, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they've only just come out, so it's early days yet. But I wish you all the best with
them.
Thank
you very much.
And it's been great talking to you again after all this time.
Thank you.
Also, your original novel, Dropping the Habit, that is available in shops as online if you don't do online stuff. Your final piece of music you chose was Ronan Keating.
Yeah.
With When You Say Nothing At All. Why did you choose that?
Well, it comes in the book, you know, and it's one of the ones when I was in Kerry, I kind of, you know, I loved his singing, and it also is very emotional and it's full of love, you know, and I mean, I think love brings you lots of things in life, and, you know, it helps you on your way, so that's why I chose him.
Absolutely. Right, so thank you very much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. So,
thank you very much.
And we're going to finish with this one then, Ronan Keating. All the best to you.
Thank you, Mandy.